Springer Mountain Farms, the purest, best-tasting chicken available. Visit SpringerMTN.com and join the flock for cooking tips, coupons, and great information. Springer Mountain Farms, simply superior chicken. Always great care and great taste.
It's in your personal life where things are going on and difficulties, you know, that seem like they're never going to end. But when you look back from a 30-year mark, you know, you get through those things and you look back, it's like... that fast.
So fast.
Like, did that happen?
I know.
Like raising a kid. Really fast years with really long days. Right?
Yeah. So very true.
That's right.
So very true.
What was it? I really talked about parenting. It says, All Joy, No Happiness, I think was the name of the book that the lady wrote.
Feels a little bleak. But yeah, I get it.
You know,
I get it.
When you stop and think about it, it's like...
I don't know if I would go there. But of course, mine's out of diapers, so I'm really sailing right now.
Yeah.
Now I'm just worried about getting her a driver's license.
Well, Oliver Anthony's got a brand new album. I love saying the name of this thing, Hymnal of a Troubled Man's Mind. Mm. And he is here. He's going to share music from that coming up in just a little bit.
Entertainment headlines. We're talking about Sam Hunt hitting number one again. Congratulations to him. Plus, Miranda Lambert breaking news this morning. We've got it all for you right here coming up.
This is WSM's Coffee, Country, and Cody.
There's a new album out, Hymnal of a Troubled Man's Mind. Oliver Anthony, Chris Lunsford is in studio with us this morning on Coffee, Country, and Cody. It is great to have you. We're out late with... Go ahead and tell that story before we get started with the interview. That's interesting than anything I've got.
So I think I've been in Nashville. This is my fourth time here, I think. But my very first time in Nashville, we played that Tootsie's Birthday Bash. And right as I was getting up on the stage, John Daly was right off to the side. And he had had a few of his John Daly's or whatever. And so, but he gave me a big hug and was just said a lot of nice things. And so I found out, I found out yesterday afternoon he had like a golf tournament dinner. Like they're raising money for really good causes. It's for a lot of it goes towards children and like vets with PTSD, and they've got two or three different things. They usually raise like over $1 million at every one of these. And so I just showed up last. Nobody knew I was coming. I just showed up with a guitar, and Jamie Johnson was there, and we got up and played some songs for everybody and stuff. And it was a good time. But yeah, I didn't get back to sleep until like 2:30 in the morning. So it was one of those things kind of winging it getting here, but it was well worth it. It was a good time.
Thank you for being here this
morning. Of course, yeah. No, my pleasure.
My birthday, December 16th, 2023, your Grand Ole Opry debut. It's my 30th anniversary week at WSM Radio. And Richmond, north of Richmond, changed everything for you. I'm going to read your words. You said if people go to your website, oliveranthonymusic.com, it says, a message from Oliver. I'm sitting in such a weird place in my life right now. I never wanted to be a full-time musician, much less sit at the top of the iTunes charts.
Yeah.
So what is your life right now, courtesy of Rich Men?
Well, my life at home really hasn't changed. I mean, I still live in the same place. I still wear the same clothes. You know, my household income is technically still the same. You know, like I'm not living some big lavish life or anything. It's just, and a lot of times when I'm at home for 2 or 3 days, I kind of forget. And then I go back out into public or something. And then I'm pretty, you know, pretty quickly reminded that it's not the same life I was living before. But it's kind of hard to hide when you're big with red hair walking around. Everybody, you kind of stick out like a sore thumb. So.
And the beard as well. You know, yeah. Jamie Johnson, your friend, said, one of these days I'm going to shave this beard.
Oh, man.
When I do, I'll be able to go back to Walmart.
Yeah. That's his retirement plan, yeah. Which is just genius, yeah.
But you say that people in the music business give me blank stares when I brush off $8 million offers. I don't want 6 tour buses, 15 tractor trailers, and a jet. So how do you travel?
So all the shows last year we ran out of a pickup truck. But I wanted to be able to bring the family along. I've got two little ones, you know, under 2 years old. And,
wow.
So everything just moves so quick. So we ended up renting a bus just, you know, for these shows we got. It's mostly weekends we're doing now through the end of the year. So we've got one bus with every bunk full right now. We got a trailer behind it. So what we're doing. So,
well, take us back to Richmond, north of Richmond. How did it all come about?
Yeah, well, I'd been putting songs on YouTube, and I was using DistroKid, which is like a service that anybody can upload MP3 audio through, and it goes to all the all the platforms, Spotify, Pandora, Apple. And so I was working at this little family-owned place that was like, they were the nicest old people, but they were real funny about people smoking weed. And one of the first songs that I put on was Ain't Got a Dollar. And so I knew if I used, you know, Christopher Anthony Lunsford as my writing name, that I'd probably end up losing my job if it got back to him. And so my grandpa had just passed away, and so I kind of used his name as an alias and started uploading everything. So anytime I'd write a song, I would just record it on my phone, and you know, I'd put it up through DistroKid. And so by the time June or July rolled around of last year, I had like a very modest amount of followers. It was like maybe 3,000 monthly listeners on Spotify and 20,000 on TikTok or something. It was just a little bit of a following. And Draven from Radio WV, I had been stalking him like 6 months trying to get, I'd written him letters in the mail and emailed every email I could find and messaging him on every platform. And we finally got connected, and he came down and recorded seven songs at my property. And he insisted that Richmond was the one we upload first. He really was the mastermind behind seeing the potential Richmond had. I didn't even want to record it when he came down. I had just finished writing it and all. And so, but he recorded it and uploaded it, and that's it. I mean, it was just, everything happened so fast from there.
What are your numbers now, those followers?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't even look. Yeah,
really?
I have no idea. Yeah. It really doesn't make a difference to me. I don't know. It's just like going to the shows and seeing the, like one of these last few shows we did, we were playing I Gotta Get Sober, and there was a guy with a beer in his hand in the front, sobbing, like a crying like
oh,
a baby,
wow.
To the
wow.
song, drinking his beer, listening to it. Like, that's what gets me going. I don't care about the, you know, I don't worry about the numbers and stuff. It's, it is what it is.
Well, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Well,
two takeaways from your Opry debut. Number one, normally after the performance, we do a little chat on stage. That was not happening.
Yeah, and Charlie was hosting that.
That was not happening. The crowd did not want to hear me talk at that point. But it was, with the exception of maybe the crowd singing back to Garth with Friends in Low Places, when they sang the lyrics back to you of Richmond, it was as loud as I have heard that. What does that feel like on stage to have 4,000 people know every single word and just giving it back to you? It's got to be crazy.
Yeah, it was, you know, like I remember even at the very first show we did, because I had never played a gig before. Like I'd went to open mics and that was it. I don't like crowds. I mean, there's a reason why I live out in the middle of nowhere, and
And it's Farmville, Virginia. That's the closest town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so even at that very first show we did, it was like 12,000 people showed up. And even at that very first show, I knew I was going to be all right, because people were singing not only Richmond, but even a bunch of the other songs. And that was at the very beginning. And so, like, yeah, it is a crazy feeling when, you know, even like when we went to Europe and Australia and stuff like that, to hear people singing along. There's a handful of them they really get into. I Gotta Get Sober was like a really powerful one in Europe. Like, all the audiences there, ironically, they were all just totally drunk singing it. But it's just, you know, it's just like, it's relatable, I guess. It's like, that is a good feeling, though, when they, you know, that makes the whole show for me. That's what makes it worth it, yeah.
And then Vince Gill gave up his final two songs and said, I think you want to hear more from this guy. And so you got to play a couple more.
Yeah, we were only supposed to be up there, I think, for like 15 minutes or something. And we ended up, it was like 45 minutes we were there. So.
And you read scripture?
Yeah, I always do. Yeah, that's kind of my, you know, there's like that joke. There's that running joke where they say, like, a lot of people make it big in music. They sell their soul to the devil or whatever. It's like that kind of, you know, there's songs about it and stuff. And so I just joke and say I try to do the opposite of that. But I kind of, I don't know. It's a long story. But even back when we were recording Richmond, Draven and I both, we had a lot of talks about God even while we were out there. And just talking about how we really wish we could do music full time and not just make it a part-time project. Mm-hmm. And so everything just, and then to have Jamie show up at my very first show, I was like, I guess that's my sign that, you know, he's like been one of my favorite artists growing up. So for him to just be there at the first show, and I don't know, it's just, so yeah, ever since then, I just, you know, it doesn't matter what the atmosphere is. If it's like, if I feel like I'm, even if I feel like people aren't receptive to it, I still just, you know, I give them a minute of it just before we get going.
From your album, which is out, and I mentioned Hymnal of a Troubled Man's Mind, you quote from Ecclesiastes and Matthew, Proverbs. Yeah.
This is WSM's Coffee, Country, and Cody.
30th anniversary week on the show, and Oliver Anthony, Chris Lunsford. You know him as the world does, as Oliver Anthony, with a new album, Hymnal of a Troubled Man's Mind. And he's in studio with us this morning. Closest gig you've got coming up, Charlie, you looked it up as far as the Nashville metropolitan area to see Oliver.
The Caverns in Pelham, May 31st and June 1st. So no matter how hot it is outside, it'll be 54 degrees for your show. It's
Have
cool.
you been in there yet?
I've never been there, but everybody's talked about it, so...
It's really cool. I mean, you were talking about the acoustics of the Ryman. This is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, you're going to love that.
So tell us about your grandfather. I'm curious, since you use his name, Oliver Anthony.
Yeah. Well, he was the only other one in the family that, like, I'm like his little clone or whatever. We were the only two that were, you know, we were both 6'6 and redheaded and left-handed. And he was just like, I don't know, we were very close growing up. He was like my... You know, he was my grandpa. You know, he's like anybody's grandpa. He's like your hero, I guess, you know.
And was he a character?
Yeah, they were very poor growing up. He was he had six siblings, so it was seven of them in total. And you know, just all the stories he told. They grew up in Washington County, Virginia, which is kind of near Bristol. Just, you know, it's that's the closest
the
big
mountains?
City. Yeah,
yeah.
So just a lot of crazy stories growing up. They had a just a real small little house, dirt floors they lived in, and you know, raised tobacco for a living, and just all the stories he told and stuff. And like I said, so he passed away right around the time I started doing started writing music, and so just it just felt right using that as if I needed an alias either way. So it was no better name I could think of than his. You know,
was he musical at all?
Not at all. My grandma was. My grandma taught me how to play guitar. She was in a little band, like maybe back in the 50s and stuff. And so and it was really special. We did that Easter Sunday charity show at the Beacon. And as a kid, she told me about how she played there once, like in the 50s or something. And so it was cool. It's really a shame they're not around. They would be. That's really the people that I'd love to tell all the stories to the most. You know, they were. Yeah, they would be really excited to hear everything. So
we've talked a little about your faith, but I'm curious, you know, the last couple of years for you, as wonderful as so many of the things are, if you're not grounded, that's enough to mess you up for an entire life. Seriously, what you've gone through the last couple of years, how important has that been, just to kind of know your purpose, know the big picture and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I went to church when I was little, and like, you know, like a lot of other people when you're a kid, like you kind of had religion thrown at you, and you, and so, and you know, there's like, you know, churches are full of people. And so anytime you got people involved, things aren't always perfect. And so I spent a lot of years, like, even though I didn't deny that there had to have been something that created all this. And like in my heart, I always knew that there was, you know, something bigger than me that I should probably follow. It was just like, I didn't want to admit that all those church people I didn't like were right about something, you know? Yeah. Like, it was like an ego thing for me. And so it was just, I had to kind of get to rock bottom to let all that go. And so, it has helped a lot, because it's just, I've just found if I just keep my mind right and try to do the right things, it's like whenever I need, like, I don't care what it is, the right person comes along at the right time or what. It's just, there's been too many things happen just even in the last few months of all this that, it's just too good to be coincidence, I guess. But I'm just going to ride the roller coaster as long as he wants me to. And then, whatever happens, happens. But
I know you were talking about recording that first song and that you were having those conversations about God and your faith. Yeah. How quickly after you saying the words, "I wish I could do music full time," did that become a reality?
Yeah, I mean, it all happened pretty quick. Like, because I was writing songs, I'd put them online, and then I would kind of forget for 2 or 3 months. And, you know, like, you know, at the time, when one thing goes bad, everything goes bad. So, like, you know, my job sucked, and I, like anyone else that's got a newborn at home, you know, my marriage was struggling, and it was just like every little part of my life felt like it was going wrong. And so I ended up buying, I'm not sponsored by them, and I don't necessarily even like their stuff, but Lewitt's got this band that says Make Yourself Heard, and I never even worn anything on my, like, I hate wearing stuff on my wrist anyway, but I stuck it on because it said Make Yourself Heard, and I was like, it reminded me every time I'd look at my hand, like, oh, I gotta go do this again, and like, Because I knew if I didn't, I'd be like 50 or 60 years old and just deeply regret not, you know. And so it just, once I started doing it every day and really dedicated myself to it, it was like, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 months later, it just, that's when Richmond hit and everything happened. But
what's your other bracelet say?
Jesus. Yeah. And so what I do now is like a lot of times at the end of the shows, it's not every show, but 90% of the shows, I'll jump down off the stage at the end and we'll wait an hour or two and just sign everything we can sign. And so it's kind of turning this thing now where like fans will switch out with me. So usually every show I keep the Lewitt one, but the other one I usually switch out with somebody every show, you know, somebody's got one that's cool. So it's kind of just become a thing now. But
well, you write about suicide, addiction, unemployment, anxiety, depression, hopelessness, these things that have been a part of your personal journey too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and on this, I wanted to make sure before, because I've got a lot of, like, new stuff written that's, you know, I've got silly songs, I got upbeat songs and love songs and everything else, but this was, it was really important to me before I move on to anything else that this, like, collection of these 10 songs were, you know, put in, like, a finalized form and out there in the world, you know?
And Paul, if you're listening, Kelly's husband, always love you like a good old dog.
Oh, well.
It's track 14.
Well, that was my wife. My wife gave me hell because all the first songs I wrote, like the first one I wrote was Ain't Got a Dollar, and then like Rich Man's Gold, and I don't know, but it got to the point where almost every song I wrote was about just me sitting out in the woods with my dogs getting high, and she's just like, I wish you'd write me a love song. And so,
and that was it.
And so me being the guy I am, I wrote her a love song, but I had to put my dogs right in the title of it. So
nice,
you know,
nice.
But there is no greater love than the love of a dog. You know,
like that's true.
Like it is a.
What kind of dogs do you have?
So I've got, they're all mutts, but they're basically German shepherds mixed with who knows what else. I don't know. They're all from the pound, but they're my babies. Yeah,
those are the best ones.
Yeah.
Hymnal of a Troubled Man's Mind, Oliver Anthony, Chris Lunsford, our guest this morning. This has been a delight. It really has.
It has, yeah.
Looking forward to
this. This is my first time talking on the radio, I think.
No!
Yeah.
Well, you aced it. Good job.
Well, you know, this is a place where Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs and Hank Williams used to do mornings. This is the radio station where all that happened, WSM Radio, closing in on 100 years next year in 2025. So
cool.
Those are some of the dead guys you like a lot.
For those of you, the off-air conversation, when he first sat down, we were just talking about people he enjoyed. He was mentioning Lighton and Hopkins and
Waylon.
And Waylon. Yeah. And he goes, I like most people I like are dead.
Yeah.
Well, he said that'll be the next album.
Yeah, that'll be one of my next
songs.
That's
a great song.
Everyone I like's dead. Yeah.
Kelly's already working on the merch.
It's good.
So we got it going. Please come back and see us.
Anytime,
For the audience, again, it may have missed it earlier, the Caverns in Pelham, back-to-back, May 31st and June 1st, the Caverns in Pelham for Oliver Anthony. And here's, where are we closing with, Charlie?
We're going to close with the song that closes the album, and I think it's the perfect album closer, Mama's Been Hurtin'.
Is there a backstory? Do you need to set this up on the song?
No, I just felt like I'll just say, I think Mama's Been Hurtin' as the last song will be a good segue into the first song on the next album. This whole album kind of tells a story from, so it's intended hopefully that the listener, if they listen to Hymnal of a Troubled Man's Mind, they start at the beginning and go all the way, you know, it's all sort of in sequence with one another. So
kind of a quantum leap.
Trying to tell a story,
This is Coffee, Country, and Cody.
Bill Cody, congratulations on 30 years at WSM Radio. It's your girl, Lainey Wilson. I'm drinking my coffee because that's normally what we're doing when me and you are hanging out, because it's always super early in the morning. I wanted to say congratulations. I'm so proud to know you, and you just treat me so well. You make me feel like family, and that's really nice when you're a long ways away from home. I love you. Congrats.
This is Randy Hart. Bill, in celebration of your 30 years, this is the theme for you.
Hey everybody, Tyler Bryan, stage manager of the Grand Ole Opry. Just want to wish Bill Cody a happy 30th anniversary.
Lainey said B-O. It had like three syllables. I love And Randy, I always refer to Randy as my artist, like Merle Kilgore used to do to Hank Williams Jr. And Tyler Jean, there he is, stage manager at the Grand Ole Opry. And
I'll show you the picture he sent me just a few moments ago.
I am a rookie compared to Tyler Bryan. 30 years is no. How many years he got, Tyler?
It'll be 40, I think, in September or October.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Yes. Well, the man's worked for upwards of a week and a half, so he's vacationing down in Panama City right now.
It's a good time.
Got the George Strait playing, man.
He really did. I think he's the reason why we max out at vacation at some point.
So you,
Tyler,
done.
You have a picture?
Oh, I don't think we should show it on the air, but yeah, he just sent me something. So he is very capable with Photoshop.
Oh, yeah.
And loves.
So then frontal nudity is involved. Is that what you're telling me?
No.
He's done some stuff with Charlie.
Oh, my head.
He doesn't send
has been,
that to me. But your head's on someone else's body. I'll show you in a little while.
I think I know which one.
Yeah, I'll send it to
you. He did Charlie as Steve Earle. Steve Earle, everything is Steve Earle except it's Charlie's face.
Yeah.
And you'll do a double take.
My favorite, well, not my favorite, the best, it wasn't my favorite, but the best is my face on Mike Lindell when he bought a MyPillow.
Oh my God.
I did a double take. I mean, I just said, he bought a MyPillow. That's nice. And everybody else, oh dear Lord, that's my face right there. It was
so good.
And Lainey was so sweet there. She made me weepy.
Love that girl.
Celebrating 30 years all week long. And Thursday is the big night at the Opry Country Classics with a 30-year theme for Coffee Country and Cody. And it'll be Marty Stewart and the Fabulous Superlatives, Susie Boggess, T. Graham Brown, Don Schlitz, the Gatlin Brothers, Larry Steven Rudy, Larry Hosts. Charlie will be at the podium playing. We talk about how when you work with Larry, it's kind of like when you have a birthday party at the bowling alley, and you put the bumpers in the gutter to keep the ball from. That's kind of what the role is when you're at the podium.
Yeah,
Larry,
you got to keep
hosting.
Yes. The Gatlin's out of the gutter.
Well, Steve's not a problem.
Okay, that's pretty right on, really, when you think about it.
Steve said they're all nice to me. I'm the bookkeeper.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly
somebody had
right.
to be. So it fell to Steve. You know, he taught school in the early days. He
was school really?
Yeah, he has a degree. I want to say elementary education.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine having him as a teacher. That would be a very strange strange kind of vibe.
They were just trying to make an and you know, Rudy, I don't know, did Rudy teach as well?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because they were both Rudy. Being the baby, he was at Tech when they were coming to town trying to make something happen in the music business. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you're working on who are you talking about coming up?
All right. So we are talking about entertainment right now. Sam Hunt hits number one yet again. Congratulations to Sam. The funny thing is, I remember being at his first number one party, and it was literally at an Airbnb in East Nashville. They rented this house, and they had a party in the backyard. It was like everyone was playing cornhole, and there was a keg at some point. I mean, it was very low key. Well, now he's got 10 number one hits. Hopefully the next party will be a little bit more of a big bash for him. Although I think he really likes just a backyard hang. That's good. House party. All right. Sam Hunt, 10 number ones. Outskirts is the one that put him at 10. He said, you know what? If it weren't for the fans coming on board so early, none of this would be possible.
From the early days, I've really appreciated the enthusiasm our fans have had and the loyalty they've stuck with us all these years. And now, you know, 10 years in, it feels like a lot of us have grown up together. A lot of them have kids now. They're bringing their kids out to the shows in the last 2 or 3 years, which is really cool to see. So we have a real relationship that goes back now, which makes it more meaningful when we get out and see some familiar faces on the road.
I mean, really, I remember being with him probably first live show in Nashville was at Rocket Town, which is the skate park center that was here. Yeah. And it was so fun. It was just completely out of the box and nobody expected it. Nobody really knew what to expect from him. But so much fun. So congratulations.
Was Rocket Town, was that Michael W. Smith in the beginning?
Oh, yeah.
He's an investor in it. I think an owner at one point.
And definitely had a contemporary Christian theme to many of the shows and everything. So that does not sound like a Georgia accent to me when Sam talks. I don't know what accent I think I'm hearing, but that doesn't sound Georgian to me.
I have some friends that are from close to where he grew up, and they all sound like that.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a specific accent in that region where he's from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Paul is from Atlanta, and his family, you know, is around the Atlanta area and Gwinnett, and they have a whole different accent than South Georgia.
Okay.
Or even, yeah. So, okay, let's talk about Miranda Lambert. Guess what, y'all? She signed a new record deal. Woo! She's been teasing all kinds of stuff on social media. In fact, a couple days ago, she just threw up this graphic that was like, "Hell hath no fury, like a woman scorned." And I was like, "Whoa! Here we go. Miranda's back at it. She's back on her stuff, man." And then she yesterday had a video. She's just slow walking slow-mo out onto the stage. Look at it. Look at that video. And she's... the words are, she set it all on fire. And if there's one thing that she learned, there it is. Mm-hmm. To be continued. Well, now we know what the to be continued means. She signed a new record deal, and she's got new music coming out May 3rd, which is next week. Feels like it's a long time away, but it's next week, May the 3rd. Miranda Lambert has signed with Republic Records, and she's also getting support from Big Loud, including country radio promotion and marketing. So we looked it up. Republic Records is a part of UMG, Universal Music Group. Mm-hmm. For 20 years, Miranda was on Sony. So when she came off of Nashville Star and was doing everything, that's who she signed with at the beginning. And her entire career, as we know her, has been with Sony Music. She parted ways with them, I think, 2022. And then we've just kind of been waiting to see, like, what's going to happen next? Well, now we know.
I was reminded my old San Antonio friend, Aaron Barker, who is in the Songwriters Hall of Fame, but he came to town to be an artist. He had written successfully for George Strait, so that helped him launch his artist career, and he signed to Atlantic. And he lost his label deal. He said, "I was on Atlantic, and so was the Titanic."
That's terrible. That is terrible.
But it's memorable.
Oh, and I do love Aaron Barker, so you know what? He came out on top. That's all
good.
Yeah,
he did. He sure
okay,
did.
This was one of the stories we touched on yesterday. Kelsey Ballerini fighting a restraining order, putting a restraining order, I should say, on a former member of her fan club. This is so bizarre and weird. So there was a guy out there that his name is Bo Ewing. He was a part of her fan club, loved Kelsey, supported her for years, became disenfranchised with her, whatever that means. And then supposedly he hacked into either her laptop or one of her devices, got a hold of some of her music that is yet to be released and was completely unfinished, and has now shared it with several third parties, according to this now restraining order. So there's an injunction that's there to protect the recordings. We'll see what happens. We do know there's new music on the way. That's the good story, I guess, out of all of this, that she's getting very close to releasing it. The bad story is that somebody else jumped the gun a little bit. This was a story that made me feel old, so I wanted to share it so you would feel old too. It's been 40 years since the movie Footloose came out. Kevin Bacon as Ren, dancing in the empty warehouse, doing the gymnastics. Oh, I loved it all so very much. So Kevin Bacon decided he was going back to high school. This is after a big online petition happened. It was filmed at Payson High School in Utah. And all the students there decided that they were going to try to get him to come back. They did a massive online campaign. They used the hashtag Bacon to Payson last fall, and it worked. It came through. He showed up on Saturday. He said, "Here we are at this beautiful, beautiful spot on this beautiful, beautiful day." And he said, "It's been a long time, 40 years. It just blows my mind. Things look a little different around here. But one thing I say that looks the same, or probably the most different, is me." So he is now going down and pacing history. I think they probably were on fire for him. But if you want to go watch Footloose, just know that it's now 40 years old.
Coffee, country, and Cody.
I knew it.
She's here. That's Jeannie Seely on Coffee, Country, and Cody with 5,354 record-setting appearances on the Grand Ole Opry.
And not enough.
It's still not enough.
Not enough. 30 years for you and it's not enough.
30 years since you called me that morning, my first day on the air. Charlie Daniels was the first in-studio guest and the phone rang. Kevin Anderson was over there where Charlie is now as a producer of the show and said, Jeannie Seely's on the phone for you. And not to be outdone, as soon as you hung up, Gene Shepherd called.
We were a tag team.
Yeah, and what was interesting, I was telling Kelly and Charlie, is that you as a little girl idolized Gene Shepherd.
Oh, yeah.
And didn't you fall dumbstruck the first time you met her?
Yeah, she was performing at Hillbilly Park in Franklin, Pennsylvania. And I'd saved my money, 50 cents, to buy a picture. And so I'm standing in that line, and I just knew what I was going to say to her. I had all these things, and I got up to her, and I'm like, I'm just looking at her. She kind of that little chuckle that I came to know very well.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, did you want me to sign that? And I had a brilliant answer of,
just nodding your head.
My head. I still couldn't say anything. But she remembered me after I came to the Opry and everything. She said, I remember you. And she said, you will know from now on when you see a young entertainer, a person, kid that wants to be an entertainer.
It was in your eyes, I think,
yeah,
she said, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, she said that you're just, they come up to you, they are just soaking up everything they can right at that moment so much. And she's right. I can tell it now when I see a young person. It's,
well,
as
Kelly,
I say, hell-bent on this career.
Speaking of soaking it up.
Okay, what did she bring you?
I don't know. But
wait a minute. Wait, you know yeah. We're on television, right? Yeah. You're opening this from Seely live?
Yeah.
With no pre-screening of this? Okay.
Well, I didn't have to open. I just had to reach in.
Okay.
So,
well, so. This is inflation. This is the best I could do, you know. When we get a raise, I'll bring a phone.
Thank you. And then I'm going to read the card.
Okay.
Just I'm going to read it cold.
And for everyone listening on the radio, it is a small bottle of champagne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just an individual size. You could pop the top and put a straw in that. Not that I've done that.
him and all his friends.
Says, Cody, if you'd been sentenced to 30 years, you'd be out now. Happy anniversary. Love you, Jeannie Seely.
But you were sentenced to life as far as I'm concerned at this job. We just love you, Bill.
Thank you so much, Jeannie.
Yeah.
Now, not to get too sentimental, would you share with the audience who may not have been around for your 20th anniversary what the gift you received was from Jeannie Seely?
I got a little trophy commode. It's mounted on a piece of wood. It's a pewter-colored commode. It says, Coffee, Country, Cody, and Crap.
20 years.
And it has been on my desk as my centerpiece since the day she gave it to me. And anybody at the Opry knows that Jeannie is famous for her gift giving.
Love it.
She just always, whatever it is that you're celebrating, whatever moment in the Opry's history we're a part of, she's always got the goods, it seems.
Do you remember like the first time that you called him, but the first time you all met in person?
Mm. Would have been Opry related, certainly.
Yeah, I would imagine.
We
said
or as
Sam,
or as a guest,
doing an interview.
I don't remember which came first.
But you didn't make a big impression. I don't remember. Because it was 30 years. She set me up.
But, well, the only reason I mentioned, we posted all these pictures of him, and at one point, we didn't know he had a hat phase. He wore a cowboy hat.
Well, that was my early life. I mean, that
look
was...
Look how cute. Yeah. Look how cute. Oh, those are all of you two together.
Whoa.
Oh, those are adorable.
I came across a picture of us at the Ryman.
That's cool.
Doing an Opry Country Classic show, and like, some I don't know, maybe TG took it. Mm-hmm. Some, but anyway, I came across it on my phone the other day. So
look at all those photos of you all together.
Yes,
my goodness, that's great.
Jeannie Seely, if you just joined us, as you listen around the world on Coffee Country, Cody's WSM Radio, and Circle, our Circle streaming platforms, CircleCountry.com, Circle Now. That's available in your app store on demand for up to 24 hours.
Okay. We have a lot of dirt on him, but I want to hear your favorite Bill Cody story. Do you have one?
Well, of the ones I could tell.
I knew where this was going to go.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite times that just came to my mind is running into your mother in the elevator at the hospital.
Oh, that's right.
And she wasn't going to let that door close and get us go on until she finished telling me how wonderful her son was, you know. And I kept agreeing with her, but, you know, that's one of my favorite things.
Mama Helen.
Yeah.
We still, Charlie archives those pieces. I saved all those phone calls.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, she was her own celebrity. You know,
yes.
We were in Cross Plains doing a remote for the Trash and Treasures weekend, their big, you know, community yard sale. Mm-hmm. And there was this couple that we were giving out WSM church fans. And they're walking at to me with the church fan and a Sharpie. And I'm like, oh, they're going to ask for my autograph. This is really sweet. No, they were showing me Mama Helen's autograph.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
They could care less who I was. Or look who just signed it, Mama Helen.
I think you should do it. A little special for Mother's Day and run some of those clips because I mean she was wonderful. So
well, you know, Kelly Sutton is the first full-time female voice of the Grand Ole Opry, and she will be there tonight.
Yes.
And you were the first female host of the Grand Ole Opry. You were sharing that backstory of how that happened in 1981. So it was in the if you will new Opry House, which just celebrated 50 years.
Yeah, well, I accidentally did it the very first time, and I was kind of hoping since it survived, they would let us do it after that, but not so for many years. But it was 1981, January, I think it was 81. I'd have to look now that I say that. Maybe 81, 85, I can't remember. Anyway, there was an ice storm. And Debbie Logue was here then, and as I'm walking to the stage, they didn't give me any warning. She said, oh, by the way, you're hosting. And I'm like, what happened, everybody? And she said, you're the only artist in the building. So I'm going real quick in my mind. Okay, what do you do now? You do your opening number, you send it to a commercial, you come back and you put on your guest. And I thought, who's my guest?
You were tossing to yourself.
And she said, well, does anybody in your band want to sing on the Opry? So Tommy Hannum, who was playing steel with me at that time, was also a great singer. He works with Winona now. And so I put Tommy on as my first guest. He and I had sung some background with John Hartford on a couple of his albums. So that was that history. And like I said, I thought maybe since everybody survived a female hosting, even the opening portion, we'd get to do it. But that didn't happen until later on when Bob Whitaker came in.
And
he was the first manager who listened to what I was saying about, you know, my point, I think, that got across. I said, and I'm not putting guys down at all, and I'm not just waving the banner, but I just said, who said that women wanted to work hard, save their money, travel all the miles to sit in an audience and only hear what men have to say?
Yeah.
I was putting myself in that seat. I want to hear what they have to say. So that was my, and ignoring half of your talent pool. And,
oh, absolutely.
And ignoring your audience.
So what year did you come to the Opry? What year did you become a member?
I made my first appearance. They didn't call it debut back then. It was May 28th of 1966. And then I think Don't Touch Me hit in June, number one. And then I didn't have time to become a member. I was on the road, and I kept saying, you know, did Mr. Divine call, you know, Hot Divine, the manager at the time. And so finally, it was September of 67 before I finally had time to come in. You know, people ask a lot of times, why aren't more of the new hot artists of the day at the Opry? And that's part of it. I mean, you are book solid. Mm-hmm. You go from nobody, everybody ignores you, to everybody wants to talk to you at once, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful time. But
which is why I truly respect Carrie Underwood, because as busy as a global star as she is, she always finds time, and it's always a two-show night, and there's always excitement. So that's, that's kudos to her for that, for sure.
Exactly, and backstage, she's just as open, too. She's open to see everybody, and she's wonderful.
I had this as a Bill Cody pick of the week when it came out. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. And there's a great backstory on how you came to record it, right?
Well, just that I had heard this song. Penn Pennington, Mitch Ballard wrote this song, and I had it. Penn Pennington had given it to me, but I couldn't play it, so I couldn't learn it. The chord structure's real. I'm not a musician. I make up stories and put a melody to them. That's it. But finally, I called Penn, and I said, I love this song, but you need to stop by the house and play it so I can see if I can sing it. And took it to Don Cusick when we were doing the album, and he, like, great. And also, I love the to hear vocals sing unison and then that split into harmony. And I love the old 40s sound. And I knew Sharon and Cheryl White could get that sound. Yeah. So we brought them into the studio. And
so reminiscent
Opry Sisters,
of what Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys would have done, speaking of the 40s, that time period.
Right.
For So Far, So Good.
More Coffee, Country, and Cody is on WSM.
And I celebrate 30 years this week at WSM Radio in the Grand Ole Opry. And Jeannie Seeley was the first ever phone call I got. She was kind enough to come by and celebrate 30 years this morning. And we talked a little bit about Jean Shepherd. She was the second person to call me, and your hero worship of her as a young artist trying to get started and her coming nearby where you grew up in Pennsylvania.
And who was the first Opry star to take you out to eat for
Bill
lunch?
Anderson.
Whispering Bill. He paid?
What?
Is it?
Excuse me.
My first meeting three. It sure was. It was Bill Anderson.
Oh.
Yeah. So a lot of great firsts.
He didn't take you to his own restaurant, though, did he?
No, he went to a little place that's not there anymore. A little place there on Mount Juliet Road.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the other night on the Opry, a special Opry moment, and it happens to everybody. Bill had a little problem. I think it was his ear monitor or something, and he couldn't hear the pitch with the band. And he tried two or three times and finally just said, I can't do it, boys. I loved what he told the audience. He said it wasn't a very good song anyway. But, of course, he hated it. He felt so bad. I went by his dressing room and gave him a hug, and I said, Bill, I'm going to tell you same thing I told Connie Smith when that happened to her one time. And he said, well, thank you. What was that? And I said, I'm not laughing with you. I'm laughing at you.
And that's how you know you're a part of the Opry family.
I love this.
I came across this. This is in the Ken Burns Country Music, a film by Ken Burns. There's, if you go back, you can pull particular artists, and it says at 21, Seeley and three girlfriends moved to Los Angeles, where she worked as a DJ on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're now on Willie's Roadhouse.
Right.
And you do that. When do you... That's Sunday afternoons?
Yeah.
That's when I hear you.
Sundays with Seeley.
Okay.
Yeah, and we got a four-hour shift there.
And wrote songs for Four Day Music, and it talks about Dottie West and Connie Smith being among the people who cut your early songs. And with Dottie, that became a lifelong friendship.
Yeah.
And Connie as well, because you're still together at the Opry. But Dottie was particularly special to you.
Yeah, when I growing up in Pennsylvania, and Dottie was on the early years, she was on a show called the Landmark Jamboree out of Cleveland, Ohio. And so, of course, I watched her there. And when I finally met her in person was at the Palomino Club in California. So I waited till everybody was gone because I wanted my time with her. And so when I first told her, I said, well, that I wanted to meet you, and I said when I first knew of you, I've been a fan since the Landmark Jamboree. And Dottie said, the Landmark Jamboree. She said, I don't even remember the last time I talked to anybody who remembered that show. Wow. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a special bond. You know what's so weird to me now is being such good friends with Tess Frizzell.
Yeah.
And
that's her granddaughter, for people who don't know. Dottie's granddaughter.
The other day, because we're talking about setting a writing appointment, And I, all of a sudden it hit me. I remember the day Dottie West called me and said, "Oh, Jeannie, can you believe it? I just found out I'm going to have a granddaughter, and her name is going to be Tess." And I, she said, "You've got to come and see. I'm fixing this nursery." Oh, something out of a movie, mm-hmm. Tess's nursery was.
And Tess's mom is Shelley.
Yeah.
Right.
To complete the lineage.
A lot of history with the Frizzell name there.
My goodness.
Can you believe her heritage? Yeah. Yeah. How could she not be beautiful, number one, and talented, and number two, and she's an artist as well?
What's interesting, though, in your career as a songwriter especially, is that it was not a country artist who gave you one of your first big breaks, but we often refer to Celia as the, you know, Miss Country Soul. Well, the the soul queen of New Orleans, Irma Thomas, was influential in your career.
What did she cut?
She recorded a song I wrote called, the first one I ever had published or recorded, called "Anyone Who Knows What Love Is Will Understand." You'll love this, Bill. Back then, I was trying to find song ideas anywhere. And as near as I can remember, I know it was from an ad in a magazine. And I believe it was for pantyhose. It said, anyone who knows what comfort is will understand. And I just thought, no, because I was going through this where everybody was like, she's crazy to be, you know. And I'm like, well, anybody understands what knows what love is would understand, you know.
I think about you when Larry Gatlin sings "All the Gold in California," and that line about a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills with somebody else's name. You actually worked at a bank in Beverly Hills, didn't you?
Yeah. I didn't have any money in there either. I was working. My first job when I moved there was at Union Bank on the corner of Beverly Drive and Wilshire Boulevard.
Oh, wow.
And I always say I couldn't even afford to look in the windows. Actually, still couldn't, probably. That's why you get the small bottle of champagne. Prices have gone up everywhere.
And like Lucy and Ethel and Ricky and Fred, you drove from the East Coast out to L.A., right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that was not a flight. That was a cross-country drive.
I had my first car I bought in 1960 was a 1958 MGA Roadster Bright Red, honey.
Uh-oh.
And then I was hot stuff till this girl moved back home in a 1960 Austin Healey. But we became friends, and then we drove those two sports cars all the way to Santa Monica Beach. Wow. All the way out Route 66.
Yes, you did.
One of the greatest weeks in my life, you know.
And then into country music history, she would drive.
Yeah.
"Teach Me Tonight," 1953. Sammy Kahn wrote the lyrics. And Sammy Kahn's most famous work, "Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow." Yeah. He has a hit every year, even after all these years. But I was reading there were 5 chart versions of this song in 54 and 55. Janet Brace, Joe Stafford, Dinah Washington, Helen Greco, and the DeCastro sisters all charted with this song in a 2-year period. And you have cut this a wonderful version that we're going to close
thank
with.
You.
The song is "Teach Me Tonight."
Yeah, that era, of course, you couldn't find that much country music back then. So I had, as we were talking earlier, the swing and Western swing influence I had, but also all of these pop singers. And when Don Kuzik was producing this album, he said, "I want to find an old pop song nobody would expect you to sing." And I said, "I don't have to look. I know
you
the
do
one."
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this song. And I noticed in the audience, that I'll say some of you might be old enough to remember this, but if not, listen to this. I think you might like it. And the young people are reacting to it. So.
In addition to the ones I mentioned, Al Jarreau, Frank Sinatra, Amy Winehouse, Natalie Cole, Liza Minnelli, the McGuire sisters.
How about
sisters.
That, "My Name," in there with them.
And Marilyn Jean Seeley.
Oh.
Known to millions around the world as Jeannie Seeley, or actually just Seeley. That's
Seeley,
how we all know and love her. Thank you for coming in this morning. I love you.
Well, happy anniversary to you, and I'm so, so happy to be here with you and help celebrate. You're
so
wonderful
you
and such an asset to all of us. We just appreciate you.
Thank you, Jeannie.
More Coffee, Country, and Cody is on WSM.
Getting ready to play a show for our troops that are stationed here, but I just wanted to take a minute and say congratulations. 30 years at WSM. That is so incredible. We could all never thank you enough for everything you have done for WSM over all of these years. You are my personal encyclopedia for country music. I love you. You are such an inspiration. Thank you so much for all you do for country music, and congratulations. What an amazing achievement. Here's to 30 more, Bill. Mwah.
Natalie Stovall, whom I introduced the first time she debuted at the Grand Ole Opry. I was there for that.
She was a kid.
Yeah, she was. And like I had met her even, I mean, many years before that through Janet Ivy, who worked with children's theater groups and performance groups.
Yeah.
And she was in the audience for Natalie's debut. But Out on the Road is part of Runaway June, she referenced there at the top. That's where she was.
They're they're a USO tour. I don't know if they're back yet or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so international travel,
she's, yeah, she's overseas. She recorded that. We missed the beginning, Charlie. But she said where she was. She's stationed somewhere.
People aren't aware why we missed the beginning.
I just want to make sure.
We just want to make sure we got it in the credits.
It's fine. Yes. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's
almost made it to 30 years. 29 and 363. So close.
Oh, well, that's fine.
We're going to rewind to the stage of the Opry for Ashley McBride.
Yeah.
Is that we're closing with
light out in the kitchen.
In a little bit. And right now, Kelly Sutton's entertainment.
Yeah, well, we were talking about Jelly Roll. Had a chance to catch up with him yesterday. He has been on a whirlwind, y'all. I mean, when things start to happen, boy, they happen quick, and he is all over the place. Mm-hmm. So got to record an episode of an upcoming podcast. It'll come out, I think, Thursday. It's going to be out for everybody to listen to, Country Heat Weekly. But when we were talking, he has already been on a mission. It was 5K in May. So there are two comedians that are bigger guys, and they decided they were going to run a 5K. I think they're calling it Two Bears in the Woods or something, because they're both big guys and they're walking or running. I don't know. Tom Segura is one of them. Mm-hmm. And Bert Kreischer is the other one. So they said it, and Jelly said, you know what? I'm in. I'm going to do it. So we talked about it. He's lost 70 pounds already. He's been eating better. He's been walking or running every day. So a 5K for anybody who's listening is a little over 3 miles.
3.1, I think.
Yeah, 3.1. So in chatting with him, I said, hey, what's the very first thing that you're going to get when you cross the finish line? And he said, water. I'm not even walking with a water bottle. I'm a big guy. I could possibly be dehydrated at that point. So in the midst of conversation, I said, well, you know, you're killing it. You're doing so well. And I mentioned something about social media. And he revealed to me, you know, I have not been on social media. I've been on a fast from social media for over 8 weeks now. And I was like, oh, really? So then that kind of sent me down the rabbit hole, like, what's going on? And I found a story. It was from his wife, Bunny. And Miss Bunny said, you know what? He has been off of social media because he was tired of being bullied about his weight. And she said, it really makes me want to cry because he is the sweetest angel baby. And she's right. He really is the sweetest human. But she said he's working so hard, he's losing weight, but people still have these comments that, you know, are just rude and mean. And so he just decided,
I don't understand that.
I don't either.
I not understand.
It's
that.
The anonymity, because you can post whatever
you
want.
You can hide behind it, can't you?
You can post whatever you want. Nobody knows who you are. You can say the meanest, awfulest things, and they feel like there's no repercussions. So, you know, Jelly, just thinking about, hey, this is better for my mental health if I'm off social media. He told me, he said, I feel better now mentally than I have probably in a very, very long time.
Well, good for you, Jelly.
Yeah. So if you're sending him messages and you're not seeing that he's read them, it's because he's off social media. And the 5K is coming up a couple weeks. It's going to be in May. He also told me he has to fly back out to L.A. to do it. He's in L.A. for a while. He's going to be at Stagecoach with us this weekend, so I get to see him again. Then he comes back. He's got a couple of shows here. Then he has to fly back just to do the 5K and then get on the plane and come back again. I was like, you didn't think that out very well, did you? And he's like, oh, I really didn't. I said I would do it. So anyway, good stuff for him coming up. All right, congratulations, Sam Hunt, 10 number one songs. I remember when Leave the Night On was number one, and the head of his record label was giving him his number one plaque, and he announced the name of the song incorrectly. So he didn't really know Sam that well. If you remember when Sam came on the scene, everybody's like, who and what's his name? Yeah. And he just took off, and it was so fast. And it was Dungan, Mike Dungan, the head of Universal Music Group. And we're standing in the backyard, and he's like, congratulations, Sam, for your number one hit, Leave the Light On.
Oh, so close.
And we all went, oh, whoops. Right, exactly. It was the worst. So now he's got 10 number ones. Dungan knows exactly who he is. Congratulations to Sam. He's on his Locked Up tour this summer. You can find all the info at samhunt.com.
And in my 30 years at WSM and the Grand Ole Opry, he and I got to do an Opry walkthrough. They taped it for television. Gave him a little tour backstage before his Opry debut.
Got to be there
for that night. Hey, we're going to wrap up the Tuesday edition of the 30th anniversary celebration all week long. Coffee, Country, and Cody. And Ketty, you're headed to the Grand Ole Opry here in a little while.
I am. I'm going to be hanging out with our friends Daly and Vincent, the Isaacs. We've got Craig Morgan, Henry Cho, Dirks Bentley, and Don Schlitz.
Tomorrow's show, I have my pick of the week, Randy Houser's Note to Self. That was the last time I had a Randy Houser song, but I got a new one.
Oh, good.
I'm going to share it. This is my pick of the week from Randy. It's brand new. I met him like first night I was in town at a writer's round with Dean Dillon. Troy Tomlinson was there. Monty Powell. His name is Don Sampson, and he did a song that through the years I've asked him to come perform on special occasions like 30 years. It's called Milestones, and he's coming by to see us tomorrow. And an encore of our visit with Jeannie Seeley, Miss Country Soul, from the Grand Ole Opry. See you tomorrow.
Springer Mountain Farms, the purest, best-tasting chicken available. Visit SpringerMTN.com and join the flock for cooking tips, coupons, and great information. Springer Mountain Farms, simply superior chicken, always great care and great taste.